The following is a paid program on this station.
Cairo Radio was paid a fee to air the following program. All information discussed on the following program is for general information purposes only and does not constitute legal advice or create an attorney-client relationship. Prior to acting on any legal matter, you should seek legal advice from a qualified legal attorney who can evaluate your situation and advise you accordingly.
Welcome to Your Partner in Law on Seattle's Cairo Radio 97.3 FM and AM 770 KTTH. Your Partner in Law is brought to you in part by the law firm Gregorick & Associates PLLC. Charting your course to a secure future, Your Partner in Law starts now. Here's your host, Rick Gregorick.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome on this beautiful Sunday morning to another edition of Your Partner in Law. I'm in the studio today with Scott Ralston. Rick is still enjoying a vacation, probably a much overdue vacation. In fact, he probably would take another week if we let him, but we need him back in here, don't we?
There's no way we're letting him take another week.
Yeah, that's enough. So anyway, folks, welcome back. It's a beautiful sunny day. Hopefully y'all get out and do something fun later, but this morning, we're going to pick up on our program from last weekend. And last weekend, we were talking a little bit about cohabitation agreements. And I believe we talked just briefly maybe about prenuptial agreements. And I think we were touching on postnuptial agreements. But this whole concept of planning in this transition phase of your life when you're either contemplating a divorce or have gotten divorced is a really important area. And Scott, you deal in this area quite a bit. But it's critical that people understand that when you go through these types of transitions, that your estate plan necessarily has to change to adapt to that situation.
Yeah, and like you said, last week we really talked a lot about cohabitation and the consequence of cohabitation and that you may find yourself in what they call a committed intimate relationship. It used to be called meretricious relationship, yeah. But they've changed the name to something kinder and gentler, to a committed intimate relationship. Yeah. And, you know, if you're cohabitating and you're, you know, in some way acting as a married couple, you may find yourself in a situation where your partner, when you split up, alleges that you are in a committed intimate relationship and you didn't expect that. You know, you didn't think you were in a committed intimate relationship. They thought you were in a committed intimate relationship, hence the reason you may be splitting, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we talked a lot about that, and we talked a lot about premarital agreements and some of the factors and the things that go into premarital agreements. And those factors and things that go into premarital agreements are also applicable to postmarital agreements. This week, what we wanted to talk about is, you know, planning for the time period when you start either a legal separation or a divorce or the end of a committed intimate relationship.
Yeah. And I think maybe it might be important, too, maybe, Scott, to come back around because I think there's some confusion over this legal separation and divorce issue.
Oh,
some
yes.
People think they're the same. And
yeah, so
just
so,
as a starting point, we can clean some of that up.
So under Washington law, there is separation and legal separation and dissolution. Okay. Those are three terms of art. They are different. In separation is, let's say you are a married couple or in a committed intimate relationship, since we've kept that kind of as part of this discussion. The separation is the date that the relationship or marriage becomes defunct. And it can become defunct by agreement of the parties. They decide, you know what, we're just not a married couple anymore or in this relationship anymore. Or one of them can move out. That's one of the triggers. And one of the things the court considers to be the
conduct, basically,
the event that evidences the separation. So that's, you know, that's that, or the filing of a petition for dissolution, petition for separation, petition to establish a committed intimate relationship and divide property. All of those are the types of things that can be the separation date. And what the effect of the separation date is that it ends the community or quasi-community. And how it does so is basically when you're in a, you know, marriage, we're going to use marriage for now and talk a little bit about that. But when you're in a marriage, unless you have an agreement, premarital or postmarital agreement, you basically, everything that you acquire during the marriage through the efforts of the community, and it's very broadly construed, is considered to be community property and community liability. And then everything that you bring to the marriage is considered separate property, and everything that you inherit or receive as a gift to you and you only is considered separate property as well. So that separation, that date that we talk about when the petition is filed or the marriage becomes defunct, whatever the reason is that triggers the separation date, is when the community ends. And you're no longer building a community. You're then responsible for your own debts incurred after that separation date.
And that can get a little blurry oftentimes.
So,
right?
So yeah, that kind of, you know, we talked a lot about committed intimate relationships. It's as blurry as whether or not there has been a committed intimate relationship, because what people consider to be separate property and what people consider to be community property can be hotly disputed. And the reason is because, you know, if you're together for 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years and the relationship ends, how do you sort out when there has been commingling what is and what is not separate property? And what is not community property?
Yeah, and that's usually quite a challenge. Now maybe, and perhaps that's a good point too. Is there some type of framework for timing of these things? I mean, is it a year? Is it 2 years? Is it 10 years before this thing actually has a better chance of surviving in this committed intimate relationship environment than shorter terms? Or it just depends on the conduct?
So time is definitely a factor in the establishment of a committed intimate relationship. You know, time is whether or not the couple themselves agreed that they were living together is the absolute requirement. That's the one thing, is that, you know, a committed intimate relationship does not start until the couple lives together.
But basically, it's everything looks like a marriage. If it, it's kind of like, I mean, it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, it's a duck, right? So that sort of thing. So,
but so back to, once there has been this separation, okay, and there's been a petition for dissolution, petition to establish that committed intimate relationship and divide the property, or a petition for legal separation. Now, here's that other term. Separation is that magical date. Legal separation is actually a judicial determination that the couple is no longer legally together. They're legally separated. And a legal separation looks basically the same as a decree of dissolution. It's a decree of legal separation or decree of dissolution. They look identical. The court divides the assets. The court divides the liabilities. The court establishes maintenance. The court, if appropriate, and the court establishes a parenting plan, and the court establishes child support. The difference between a dissolution and a legal separation is that you are no longer married. That's really the only distinction between them. Now, why do people do a legal separation over a divorce? There's a number of reasons. One may be religious. One may be, and I've heard this several times, for the kids, for the family. Yeah. We're not going to get a divorce because we still have kids under a certain age.
Yep. And I hear insurance nowadays tossed around.
And insurance is an interesting issue because it really depends upon the plan, okay, the insurance plan involved. But let's say one of the spouses works for a company and it insures the whole family. One of the factors that may go into a choice to do a legal separation over a dissolution is the cost of insurance. You know, neither one of the departing partners has a desire to remarry, and staying married as long as they are legally separable is acceptable to both people. And the reason may be because of the cost of insurance, because when the spouse, and I'll call them the non-breadwinning spouse for the sake of this discussion, when that divorce occurs, that's going to trigger 30 days that they can continue to be on insurance. They're going to get a letter, and at that point in time, they can go on to COBRA. And under the COBRA rules, I believe it's 36 months that you can be on COBRA of your former spouse, which is longer than when you're terminated by quite a bit more.
But not a great alternative, usually.
But the problem is, you may have COBRA available to you when you're legally separated or divorced. The problem is the cost of it. And that's why people will stay legally separated. And let me correct that. When you're divorced, that will trigger the COBRA. When you're legally separated, it won't trigger the COBRA. The question is whether the plan will allow you to continue. And if the plan does allow you to continue as legally separated, then you can continue to be on your spouse's insurance at the same cost as when you were married, even though you are now legally separated.
Yeah.
Some plans, however, this has changed, and it really, again, depends upon the plan. Some plans will not allow you your spouse from whom you are legally separated to continue to be on your plan, and so therefore they have to go on to COBRA.
Yeah, and I hear this time and time again that that's a big issue, because for those of you that have never had the misfortune, I'll put it that way, of going on to COBRA, the obligation is to continue your coverage, but not to continue at the same price you were paying before. So that's a rude awakening for a lot of people.
Well, and it's huge.
Yeah.
It can be 800 plus a month for a spouse.
Oh, easy. Yeah. That happens all the time.
It can be very, very costly.
Yeah. So circling back, now that we've kind of cleared up this separation, legal separation and dissolution kind of issue, is planning in these various environments, and that is both when you're in the process as well as once you've completed the process. There are a number of things that you need to make sure that you've taken care of properly, and a lot of that in many cases, particularly when you're divorced, will be informing your estate planning attorney about the divorce and what assets you have, what assets you cannot alter, and these types of things start coming into play.
Yeah, and so what happens, let's kind of back up under Washington law. When you're married, you have the right to dispose of all of your separate property and half of the community property through your estate plan. And it does – what that means is it does not have to go to your spouse.
Yep.
Now, there are some rules that apply to this, which were just a little more complicated. There's, you know, some spousal elections, et cetera. We're not going to get into that today. So for the sake of today's discussion, you can dispose of half of the community property and you can dispose of all of your separate property through your own estate plan. So you can bequest it to your kids or your neighbor. And we're going to talk about how important this issue is when there is a petition filed for legal separation or dissolution or to end a committed intimate relationship, because it's very important that people understand a little trick, and it's a problematic trick, quite frankly, under Washington law. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk about that.
Yep, you want to join in, 888-973-5476. Your partner in law will be right back.
Sometimes big events in your life all of a sudden cause you to wake up and realize you should start planning for the future. I lost my dad a little over a year ago to cancer, and I remember thinking to myself, I should probably have a will or trust. So I called Rick Gregorek. Now, the reason I called Rick Gregorek is because I've been listening to him on Cairo Radio on Sunday mornings, and the guy is an absolute expert. I sat down with him. I explained my situation. He walked me through all the different variables, whether it was a trust or charitable trust, real estate, taxes. It was so complicated. I was so glad I had Rick right there to walk me through the whole process. So be proactive. Take control of your life right now. Go meet with Rick Gregorek and schedule a complimentary consultation at yourpartnerinlaw.com. You can also listen to Rick's show like I do, Your Partner in Law, every Sunday morning at 9 on Cairo and KTTH. Schedule a meeting with my estate planner, Rick Gregorek, at yourpartnerinlaw.com. That's yourpartnerinlaw.com.
A lot of people with near or over $1 million in assets will mistakenly pay more in taxes in a long-term care situation than what would have cost them to set up an insurance plan to pay for the care needed. Due to recent changes in the Pension Protection Act, these new asset-based plans guarantee a tax-free benefit for long-term care and pay your estate back with interest if you never use it. But most importantly, it's about having a plan. All your kids have to do is carry out your wishes. You're not a burden on them. That's why I love the advice my wife and I got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. Brian has an asset-based class Saturday, August 17th in Bellevue. This class is aimed at individuals and couples who have accumulated close to or more than $1 million in assets and may be considering self-funding long-term care costs in the future. Learn why that is not the best idea. Seating will be limited for this special asset-based class, August 17th in Bellevue. Reserve your spot right now, 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Have you ever wondered what would happen to you or your loved ones or your business if you were incapacitated tomorrow or if you died prematurely? None of us plan on it, but not addressing these issues can be catastrophic to your finances, your family, and your business. Hi, this is attorney Rick Gregorek, host of Your Partner in Law, right here on Cairo Radio every Sunday morning at 8. Elder or estate planning is necessary for all of us, regardless of our wealth or lack of wealth. So whether your estate is large or small, you simply must have a proper legal life plan in place to protect you, your loved ones, and your business. For your free estate or elder law planning consultation, give us a call today at 425-284-3450. At Gregorick & Associates, my staff and I will take the time necessary to understand your needs and recommend the best plan for you and your family. Call us today at 425-284-3450. That's 425-284-3450, or go to yourpartnerinlaw.com. That's yourpartnerinlaw.com.
Now back to Your Partner in Law with Rick Gregorick on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM and AM 770 KTTH.
All right, welcome back. That'll get you up this morning, a beautiful Sunday morning. Like I said earlier, hope everybody has a chance to get out and do a little something fun today. Perhaps do a little grilling in the backyard, a little grilling and chilling. I think I plan on doing that later. It sounds good.
You said you're going
to
go maybe.
Going to go float the river today.
Float the river?
Yeah.
I'm going to head.
I probably shouldn't let that out of the bag, because now everybody that didn't know what they're going to do today is going to head up and float the river. But I'm not going to give any more details other than that. So.
Right. You're not going to talk about the river.
I'm not telling you which one. I'm not telling you what's near it. I'm not doing any of that today. Yeah. So before we took the break, we were talking about this environment surrounding pre-divorce and post-divorce planning, and why it's really important that you make sure that you take certain key steps to make sure that your estate plan works the way it wants. Because if you had a plan with a prior spouse, and let's just use the marriage context for a moment here, that likely will have several modifications in it. Not only will your spouse typically be removed from that plan, in many respects, they'll be removed from things such as being your agent under your power of attorney and your health care agent and perhaps a trustee relationship. And there's a number of different things that you need to look at.
And this is what I was talking about before. All of these, you know, like you say, your agencies under your powers of attorney, your will and everything. When you file that petition or your spouse files that petition, that does not affect your estate plan. That is something that surprises people.
Yeah.
It is.
Now, in some states, it does. For sure.
In some states, it does. In Washington, it does not.
California is essentially an order entered at the time that terminates any estate.
Well, we're going to talk about California. Yeah. We're going to come back and talk about California, because California's got another rule that's a real problem that I've had to litigate. We'll talk about that one. But let's talk about Washington for a second. In Washington, when that petition is filed, your estate plan continues on. And so if you become disabled or pass away during the process of a legal separation or during the process of a dissolution, i.e. before a decree of legal separation or before a decree of dissolution is entered, and you become disabled or you pass away, your estate plan will control if you have not done anything after the date of separation, which was the term that we were talking about earlier, which is when the petition is filed. I mean, you can do something before as well. As I said earlier, you're free to dispose of your community and just free to dispose of your separate property as you choose. But frankly, most spouse partner estate plans are mutual estate plans of some form, where they bequest, you know, all or most of their estate to their spouse, either outright or in trust. And this is just kind of a general reality of the way that people do their estate planning. And this is particularly for first marriages. But when you're married, let's say you've been married for 10 years, you're mid-30s, you got two kids under 10 years old, and you file that petition for legal separation or file that petition for dissolution, that has no effect whatsoever on your estate plan. So if you pass away during that time period, your, you know, estate is going to go the way of the estate plan that pre-existed the separation date when the petition was filed. And that surprises a lot of people, and it troubles a lot of people, because especially in this scenario that I'm talking about where you've got kids, you may or may not want your estate, if you were to pass away during that process, to go to your spouse. You may want that to go to your kids instead. And unless you do some planning that puts it there and goes in that direction, it's not actually going to occur.
Yeah, you've got to point it in the right direction. That's absolutely critical. And the other thing that a lot of people forget about when they do estate planning, Scott, are things that what we call things that pass outside of the system, like beneficiary designated items like IRAs.
Correct.
And life insurance in particular can be problematic when you don't get around to changing beneficiaries on.
Well, and changing beneficiaries on IRAs, during a dissolution. That is that's an issue, and that's yeah. kind of beyond the scope of the discussion today. But changing beneficiaries on bank accounts, you're correct. So if you've got stock brokerage accounts that are non-retirement type of accounts, if you've got bank accounts, checking, savings, money market, et cetera, all of those payable on death provisions are going to still be in place if you pass away during the process of a dissolution or legal separation. Yeah. And so that's why, you know, people need to, when they sit down and they start talking about the dissolution, and this is a lot to take in, okay? When you're starting the dissolution or the legal separation process, I mean, there are so many things that are of worry that you don't really necessarily think about. This is a priority that you need to deal with. And a lot of people just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, they're already caught up in something.
They're already caught up in something else that's both emotionally and financially draining. I mean, because you're stuck in a tough situation where you have to deal with a lot of stuff. And people's primary concern usually is how are we going to maintain two households, and how are we going to deal with the kids?
Right.
Those are the two things that people are really worried about when that initial petition for legal separation or dissolution is filed. And so when you're dealing with those issues, you don't want to think about or even address the estate planning issue, but it is important to do so.
It, certainly with minor children, it's critical that you do that, right?
Again, it comes down to –
particularly if one of the parents is unstable, right? If
right.
That's kind of a heightened
concern. And we all know – I mean, I think we all know that the statistically – one of the number one, if not the number one reason that couples have trouble and marriages don't survive is money.
Yep.
Money issues. Fighting over money. Those are the big issues. And so if you're in a situation where money is an issue and now you're going through the process of legal separation or dissolution, your spouse, if you were to pass away, may not be the one that you would want to be in charge of money for your kids.
Absolutely.
You might want, you know, your parents or your siblings or your friend or somebody else to be in charge of your share of the community and your separate property for the benefit of your kids.
Absolutely.
And that's going to take estate planning.
That's
You're going
right.
to have to do that estate planning before the dissolution that's or legal right. separation is filed, just to, as an insurance policy.
All right, we'll pick up on this thread. We got to take a quick break, and we will pick up on that thread when your partner-in-law resumes.
Biggest mistakes you can make heading into retirement is not planning for the high cost of an extended healthcare situation. A lot of people assume they have enough money saved only to watch everything they've worked hard for get whittled down to nothing from the ongoing costs of a long-term care situation. Don't make this mistake. By putting a long-term care plan in place, you guarantee yourself a source of funds to pay for care when needed, and you also know you won't become a burden on your family. Do what my wife and I did. Go learn all about the new long-term care plans offered by 525 Advisors. These new plans protect your savings, protect your family, and pay your estate back if you never use them. Learn more by attending one of the upcoming classes taught by Brian Ott, who's the host of Long-Term Care Radio right here on Cairo. There are classes coming up in August on Saturday the 17th and Monday the 19th. Seating is limited, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. Classes are free, and you'll even get a copy of Brian's book. Go to 525longtermcare.com.
Have you ever wondered what would happen to you or your loved ones or your business if you were incapacitated tomorrow or if you died prematurely? None of us plan on it, but not addressing these issues can be catastrophic to your finances, your family, and your business. Hi, this is attorney Rick Gregory, host of Your Partner in Law, right here on Cairo Radio every Sunday morning at 8. Elder or estate planning is necessary for all of us, regardless of our wealth or lack of wealth. So whether your estate is large or small, you simply must have a proper legal life plan in place to protect you, your loved ones, and your business. For your free estate or elder law planning consultation, give us a call today at 425-284-3450. At Gregorick & Associates, my staff and I will take the time necessary to understand your needs and recommend the best plan for you and your family. Call us today at 425-284-3450. That's 425-284-3450, or go to yourpartnerinlaw.com. That's yourpartnerinlaw.com.
We return to Your Partner in Law on Seattle's Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM and AM 770 KTTH with your host, Rick Gregorek.
All right, we are back talking a little bit about this arena and divorce and separation. And I believe before we took a break, Scott, you were leading in on something that's important to do almost in every case, and that is to do a thorough review of your estate planning documents to make sure things line up correctly and be able to manage your affairs during this kind of trying time when you're either just post-divorce or in the process. And
So I'm going to talk a little bit. I mentioned earlier, and I will come back to the issue, California, the state of California. So in Washington, okay, we have a, I'm going to call it like a fail-safe rule, basically. When the divorce is entered, when the final decree of dissolution is entered, then your estate plan that you have in place is treated as though your spouse predeceased you. There is a statutory presumption that that's what you wanted and that or that's what you would want under the circumstances. So if you have an estate plan in place, you haven't changed the estate plan, and your spouse is the beneficiary of your estate plan, and the decree of dissolution is entered. Notice I keep saying decree of dissolution. The decree of dissolution is entered, then you pass away. The presumption will be on everything that you did not want your spouse to inherit. Now, that presumption could be rebutted by other evidence, okay? What that evidence could be, you know, it could be something in the decree itself. I have seen where decrees where there's a life insurance policy that is, even though there is a presumption that that life insurance beneficiary designation would be revoked, that if it is in the decree, then that particular asset of the marriage would be treated differently. It could be, you know, perhaps an oral agreement. Now, it would be very difficult to prove up an oral agreement, but there is, you know, the potential that there's some sort of an oral agreement. And there's, you know, it's a facts and circumstances type of test in which that presumption could potentially be rebutted. Yeah. California. I had a case where a husband and wife divorced in California, and then husband was in Washington after the marriage. Several years later, passed away. He had never changed the beneficiary designations on his life insurance policies. Now, this was a divorce entirely under California law, no connection with Washington. And under California law, the presumption was different. And those life insurance policies ultimately ended up going to the spouse, former spouse, I should say, which was not intended. But that is what occurred because California has a different presumption than Washington. So if, you know, we're talking today about divorces and divorce law and community property and separate property rules under Washington law, if you got divorced in another state, moved to Washington, and you've never done anything with your estate plan, it is possible that the laws of the other state would potentially control the outcome of what happens with your assets when you pass away.
Yeah, and what a mess that can be.
And yeah, and this was a military. This was a guy in the military that was moving around quite a bit. So it wasn't just in Washington. He was moving around quite a bit. But I mean, you can see the problems here. And so again, do your estate planning. When you sit down and you initially begin the process of going through a legal separation or a dissolution, you want to talk to your attorney about what you want to do with your estate. And when you finalize, if you haven't talked to your attorney and figured that out, you definitely want to do something to figure out what you want to do. Because once you finalize and you're no longer married, you're going to have a much more clear picture of what your assets are, what you've taken from the marriage, and what liabilities you've taken from the marriage, and what you have available for your children under that scenario with two kids under the age of 10.
Right. And very often that will play, especially with minor children, Scott, that'll play into that decision about guardianship, right? And even if you have two parents that are you know, let's just say the reason for the divorce is one of the parents was unstable, perhaps had an addiction problem or something like mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. So this is where this issue of guardianship of minor children becomes really, really important, not only in the traditional context, but in the estate planning context, if something were to happen to two parents.
And what Ted is talking about is that in every estate plan, or at least every estate plan that we do, we have what we call a guardianship election. Okay. And so in your own estate plan, you would elect who you want to be the guardian of your kids in the event that you pass away. That guardianship selection has no effect whatsoever on your spouse or former spouse. And the reason is because your spouse or former spouse is going to have most likely under custody of those kids. You're going to have a parenting plan in place, and you and your spouse share custody. Or I keep saying spouse. I should be saying former spouse. You and your former spouse share custody under that parenting plan. You pass away. In all likelihood, the kids are going to go to your former spouse, and the parenting plan is just going to become a nullity.
Right.
It's just going to disappear. Okay. Right. Now, if that individual has, like you say, problems, whether it's substance abuse problems, whatever the problems are, that would prevent them from being the custodial parent, then your guardianship election may have effect, because ultimately it is the court's decision,
right,
okay, who it is that should be the legal guardian under those circumstances. And this would also be the same case if your former spouse predeceases you, okay, and then you are the one that has the 100% custody of the kids. There's no parenting plan in place when you pass away, because again, it's a nullity. And then you pass away yourself, or you become disabled.
Yeah.
We keep talking about passing away, but becoming disabled would be another reason.
Yeah.
Then the court is going to go ahead and take into consideration what the individual or individuals that you have designated that should be the guardian of your kids under your estate plans.
Right.
And the court ultimately has the say, because I love to use extreme examples, but let's say that you designated someone that has a criminal history. Inappropriate type of criminal history, certainly for handling kids, then the court is going to go ahead and not approve that. So when we get back, we'll have some more discussions. And if you want to chat with us, you got a question, 888-973-5476. Your partner-in-law will be right back.
My dad would always say the three worst words in the English language were shoulda, coulda, and woulda. So many people with retirement right around the corner or in the middle of it have the shoulda, coulda, wouldas facing them. They're not proactive. You didn't take care of the will. You didn't take care of the trust. They didn't do what was needed to do when it came to real estate and taxes. So right now, let's avoid the shoulda, coulda, wouldas and call Rick Gregorick. Rick Gregorick is my estate planner. I sat down with Rick, explained my situation. He walked me through all the different variables, whether it was a trust or a charitable trust, real estate or taxes. It is so complicated. You've got to rely on an expert like Rick, who is so kind and knowledgeable about all of it. So be proactive. Take control of your life now. You can schedule a complimentary consultation at yourpartnerinlaw.com. You can also listen to Rick's show, Your Partner in Law, every Sunday morning at 9 on Cairo and KTTH. Your Partner in Law with Rick Gregorick, my estate planner, yourpartnerinlaw.com.
This is Michael Medved. Financial experts will tell you that you should have a plan in place for the high cost of long-term care. If your plan consists of using your savings to pay for any long-term care needs in the future, then take a moment to contact 525 Advisors. 525 Advisors are the local long-term care experts. They will show you how to set up an asset-based plan using a portion of your existing savings. Now, this way you maintain control of your money and you're guaranteed to get your money back even if you don't need long-term care. For every dollar you put in today, 525 Advisors will show you how to get $3 to $4 back in tax-free long-term care protection. Call 525 Advisors today to learn how you can put a portion of your savings to work and protect your family and the rest of your assets from the high costs of long-term care. Call today at 425-748-8188. That's 425-748-8188 and 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Retirement. What does it mean to you? Has it changed as a result of today's economy? Are you worried about your future? Could there be stormy seas ahead?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, founder of Gregrick & Associates. We're a dedicated team of legal and tax professionals that can help you navigate your course for a secure future. Whether you're just thinking about your retirement or you're well into your retirement years, whether you're single, married, or involved in a domestic partnership, we can help you create your necessary legal and tax planning.
I am so glad I found one firm that can help me with all my legal and tax needs.
Call today for your free consultation. 425-284-3450. That's 425-284-3450.
You can also sign up for a partner-in-law event. Just go to yourpartnerinlaw.com and find the elder law or estate planning course that's best for you. You can register for both events by going to yourpartnerinlaw.com. yourpartnerinlaw.com.
Now back to Your Partner in Law with Rick Gregorick on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM and AM 770 KTTH.
All right, folks, welcome back. Your Partner in Law, another live Sunday broadcast. If you folks want to join in on the discussion, and I'm sure a lot of you folks have been in this position or in that position now, feel free to call us, 888-973-5476. Be happy to answer any questions you might have in this arena or other arenas for that matter. Heck, Scott and I even take recipes over the air if that's something that you're interested in talking about.
Absolutely. We like grilling recipes. We're always, like smoking recipes.
We like it all. So
I made Thai food last night.
Did you? Yeah, you said you were threatening to cook. So
yeah, I threatened to cook. Good. And I did it. So
that sounds good, actually.
Some ground pork with Thai chilies.
Oh, nice. Ooh, that sounds over good. Oh, you got me going again. I'm hungry already.
Tasty.
I'm hungry already.
All right. So besides recipes, we do like to talk about the law. And if you want to join us in the conversation, you give us a quick call, 888-973-5476. Yep. So we were talking a little bit about estate planning and making sure that you do your estate planning during the dissolution process. Okay, yep. You finish up the dissolution process or the legal separation process. You put that estate plan in place. Okay, and a couple years later, you meet somebody. Now you got to start thinking about a new estate plan because you are potentially entering into the world of the blended family. Which is, of course, one of my favorite things in the world because it's really, really good for business. That's because right. Blended families are what I call litigation breeders.
Yes.
There are always issues with blended families when improper or no estate planning has been done. We talk about this weekly, about how incredibly important it is when you get into a blended family to do appropriate estate planning. So bringing it all full circle, we started this two-part show last week talking about the committed and intimate relationship and how couples sometimes find themselves in a committed intimate relationship when one of them didn't realize that's the direction that the relationship was at. So now you're divorced, you got two kids, you meet someone, they got two kids. Actually, should it be three? Should we do the Brady Bunch?
Oh, make it odd for sure.
Oh, I think we need to do the Brady Bunch. Yeah. So we have the Brady Bunch. Of course, the Brady Bunch, everything worked out real well for them. But so you got three kids. You got three. Yeah, that's true. So you got three kids and your new partner has three kids. Okay. And you start living together and you don't get married. Okay. Now, are you in a committed intimate relationship? So we're back, like I said, full circle to where we began, the whole thing with a committed intimate relationship. You start living together. Do you have your estate planning in place? Do you have that cohabitation agreement in place? Okay, two things that you're going to want to do. Or are you going to get remarried? You get remarried. Do you have that premarital agreement in place? Do you have a postmarital agreement in place? Do you have the estate planning in place that is appropriate for being in that blended relationship? And we're talking about now when you have young kids, okay? The same is true, the need for the estate plan in a blended relationship when you're in a older time period in your life. Well, let's say you're well into your 60s or early 70s, okay? You decide to get remarried. You've got kids. You've got grandkids. Your spouse has kids and grandkids. Okay. What happens when you become disabled? Who's going to be your decision maker? Is it going to be your new spouse? Is it going to be one of your kids, some of your kids? Is it going to be a trusted friend? You know, these are the types of things that you would need to plan for.
Heightened focus on disability at that time of your life. And more importantly, and I'm sure we're going to get to this next, but whose bucket of money is going to be used to care for you during your incapacity is usually the real kicker.
Well, and that is. And, because I do primarily litigation, I have had to go to court several times on these cases where you have the blended family without or with an inappropriate estate plan. And what happens is the kids come in, and the kids who don't have a relationship or even have a bad relationship with the new spouse do not like the decisions that are being made by the new spouse. They view the decisions as being, and here it is, this is the reality, they view the decisions as impeding or affecting their potential inheritance.
Yep.
It has to do with money. Or they think that the decisions that are being made are inappropriate.
Yeah.
That also comes up.
But it's always pretty much one of the true. It's control or it's money
it's
or a
money,
combination of
money. Money and or control. Yeah. But it's money most of the time.
Yeah.
So you know, you got to have an estate plan to deal with this. And the reason is because there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. And it's going to cost a lot of money. Because either your spouse is going to file some form of a petition or your kids are going to file some form of a petition. And you're going to end up with the court system having to come in and deal with your entire family and make decisions that you may not have wanted to have been made if you become incapacitated.
Yep.
And then the same thing is true when you pass away. Where do you want your stuff to go?
And again, that's the purpose, folks, of having some type of plan in place to kind of form those outcomes where otherwise you're going to be stuck with what we call the black robe choice, which is not the choice most of you folks will want. So when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about that context. And if you'd like to join us, 888-973-5476 and your partner-in-law, we will be right back.
Sometimes big events in your life all of a sudden cause you to wake up and realize you should start planning for the future. I lost my dad a little over a year ago to cancer, and I remember thinking to myself, I should probably have a will or trust. So I called Rick Gregorek. Now, the reason I called Rick Gregorek is because I've been listening to him on Cairo Radio on Sunday mornings, and the guy is an absolute expert. I sat down with him. I explained my situation. He walked me through all the different variables, whether it was a trust or charitable trust, real estate, taxes. It was so complicated. I was so glad I had Rick right there to walk me through the whole process. So be proactive. Take control of your life right now. Go meet with Rick Gregorek and schedule a complimentary consultation at yourpartnerinlaw.com. You can also listen to Rick's show like I do, Your Partner in Law, every Sunday morning at 9 on Cairo and KTTH. Schedule a meeting with my estate planner, Rick Gregorek, at yourpartnerinlaw.com. That's yourpartnerinlaw.com.
A lot of people with near or over $1 million in assets will mistakenly pay more in taxes in a long-term care situation than what would have cost them to set up an insurance plan to pay for the care needed. Due to recent changes in the Pension Protection Act, these new asset-based plans guarantee a tax-free benefit for long-term care and pay your estate back with interest if you never use it. But most importantly, it's about having a plan. All your kids have to do is carry out your wishes. You're not a burden on them. That's why I love the advice my wife and I got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. Brian has an asset-based class Saturday, August 17th in Bellevue. This class is aimed at individuals and couples who have accumulated close to or more than $1 million in assets and may be considering self-funding long-term care costs in the future? Learn why that is not the best idea. Seating will be limited for this special asset-based class, August 17th in Bellevue. Reserve your spot right now, 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Have you ever wondered what would happen to you or your loved ones or your business if you were incapacitated tomorrow or if you died prematurely? None of us plan on it, but not addressing these issues can be catastrophic to your finances, your family, and your business. Hi, this is attorney Rick Gregorek, host of Your Partner in Law, right here on Cairo Radio every Sunday morning at 8. Elder or estate planning is necessary for all of us, regardless of our wealth or lack of wealth. So whether your estate is large or small, you simply must have a proper legal life plan in place to protect you, your loved ones, and your business. For your free estate or elder law planning consultation, give us a call today at 425-284-3450. At Gregorick & Associates, my staff and I will take the time necessary to understand your needs and recommend the best plan for you and your family. Call us today at 425-284-3450. That's 425-284-3450, or go to yourpartnerinlaw.com. That's yourpartnerinlaw.com.
We return to Your Partner in Law on Seattle's Cairo Radio 97.3 FM and AM 770 KTTH with your host, Rick Gregorick.
All right, welcome back, folks. Partner in Law in our last segment here. Hey, if you want to get in on the discussion, folks, 888-973-5476. We've got about 10 minutes left, and we'll be gone until next week, Scott. So
yeah. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about what happens when the blended family things go south. And what we're talking about is when you're happily in a blended family relationship and you either become disabled or you pass away. And the blended family, again, so people understand what we're talking about, is some form of a second type or third type of relationship where each of the partners in the relationship has children, possibly grandchildren as well, from prior relationships. And one of them becomes disabled. One of them passes away. It can be really, really ugly.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is – we tell everyone that you need planning. You're 18 years old. You're leaving for college. You need planning. Okay. You're 70 years old. You're in a blended relationship. You need planning. And everybody in between needs planning.
Yeah.
So you got to put that type of stuff in place. You got to sit down, talk with an attorney, talk about your situation, you know, and work through it and come up with the plan that's appropriate, because these cases end up being incredibly costly. They end up being high conflict, and
yeah,
you know, and outcomes are not predictable.
Yeah, I mean, 50% of all litigants are unhappy, right? I mean, we can use that as a starting point, yeah, because that's the truth, right? And so, well, this is an arena that we see. And here's the thing about these kind of disputes, folks, is that generally speaking, people like us, we make money in these situations, but all it really does ultimately is just deplete the estate, and everybody ends up walking, sure, away with less ultimately, right, in these types of disputes. And it takes a long time for people to understand the cost of these things and the overall impact on everybody in the plan that usually results in less money when you start off fighting about getting more money.
And they're avoidable.
Yeah, completely avoidable.
They're avoidable.
Generally.
And I'll tell you, I mean, I know you've had this conversation as well, but I've had many a conversation when I'll sit down and it's the first time I've met the person, and either their parent is in a blended family type of relationship, and they're either disabled or they have passed away. And the conversation pretty much goes like this. Dad told me this. Dad told me this. Dad told me this. Well, what's on paper isn't the same. And it may have been that Dad intended whatever it is that he told the child to occur. But not having put it down on paper doesn't mean it's going to occur.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this oral estate plan, there's no such thing.
Yeah, it's not worth the paper it's not written on. We say that all the time, but it's absolutely true. And oral agreements, as most folks know out there, when it's important, oral agreements are incredibly risky, and reducing it to writing is the way to fix the problem. And literally any writing, right? It can be on a piece of notebook paper, it could be on a napkin, it could be on anything, really, just some evidence that you've entered into this type of an agreement with somebody, or you have some basic agreement with these people in writing. And there are obviously more formalities and things like that that go with it, but some writing is better than no writing, typically, right? So,
but, of course, we don't advise that because, these are not estate plans.
That's right. Uh-huh. But that's right. And that was more of a matter of proof kind of a
right. But the thing is that, like I said, I have this conversation. I have it regularly where someone will come in and they'll start chatting with me, and they're like, this is what Dad said. This is what Dad said. And oftentimes these are, you know, blended family situations. You've got second marriage, we'll say, for the sake of the discussion. And there is, you know, Dad basically has agreed with new wife And new wife has agreed with dad that, hey, I'll take care of your kids. Okay, they got the same agreement. I'll take care of your kids. Don't worry, I'll take care of your kids. Your kids will get, you know, they'll get Blackacre.
Yeah.
You know, and then when dad passes away, it doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. And even though that agreement may be there, there's no way to honor that agreement. There's no way to enforce that agreement. That's where the estate plan needs to come in.
Right.
You've got to have that estate plan in place because you cannot trust the other spouse, unfortunately, to do what it is that you guys have agreed to.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. With all and a lot of times, Scott, frankly, with good intentions, these people have these kind of arrangements that they think are going to work out. And inevitably, mm-hmm. like we find out, it doesn't work. And then we have a child who either has been disinherited or inherits such a little sum of money that he's apt to contest it and go after the other parent. And, you know, usually, like I said, some of those things are they're incredibly expensive and they're incredibly emotionally draining. And it's just one of those arenas that we want to have you avoid. And the way you avoid it is by having proper planning.
And it may be, you know, we keep talking about the more nefarious situation. It may be that the spouse, the surviving spouse, wants to honor that, but they can't.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about it much today, actually at all. But there's the Medicaid implication
yeah.
as well. I mean, maybe it is that the house was supposed to go to the deceased father's kids. And maybe it is that that surviving spouse wants that to occur. But the problem is because it's not on paper, she can't do that because it would be a potential Medicaid disqualification event.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so there are reasons that these things may not occur above and beyond the fact that there isn't a written estate plan in place.
Yeah.
And again, you've got to have the written estate plan in place. You've got to have the appropriate powers of attorney in place for when you become disabled so that, you know, who it is that you want to be your decision maker during a period of disability is who you choose it to be. You may want it to be your spouse. You may not want it to be right. your new
Absolutely.
Spouse.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and you know, a lot of these second, third marriages – there's love, okay, and they're strong relationships, but there's still the desire that one's estate plan goes to their kids and that their kids are the ones that make the decisions for them. And that's not unusual.
Yeah.
And the way that this is done is sitting down with a qualified attorney, sitting down with someone like us from Gregorick & Associates. If you want to reach us, you know, give us a call. Our office number is 425-284-3450. You can make an appointment with Ted Hansen, myself, Scott Ralston, Rick Gregorick, when he gets back from vacation. And, you know, as we always talk about on the show, the initial consultation is complimentary for estate planning. And so you can come in and chat with us about this stuff and start talking about what it is that you need to do and what it is that you want to do for your estate planning. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Partner in Law with Rick Gregorick. Event info, newsletters, and Your Partner in Law podcast can all be found at yourpartnerinlaw.com. To schedule an appointment with Rick Gregorick, call 425-284-3450. That's 425-284-3450. For more information on the show or to sign up for a free Partner in Law event, visit yourpartnerinlaw.com. Tune in next Sunday morning at 9 to Your Partner in Law with your host, Rick Gregorick. Simulcast on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM and AM 770 KTTH.